Good morning.
Good morning, and may it please the court, John Allured appearing on behalf of petitioner Brenda Menibarkoto and her minor daughter. Brenda is in the court today. I would like to reserve 2 minutes. I would like to focus on the asylum claim, and in particular, the well-founded fear aspect of that claim, and also pattern and practice. And in determining that Brenda did not have an objectively reasonable fear of returning to Honduras, the Board of Immigration Appeals committed 3 errors. They committed legal error in applying the circuit's law, they committed legal error by ignoring highly probative evidence, and they committed legal error by referring to but not giving reasoned consideration to other evidence. And I want to mention something that I saw in the government's brief that I wanted to point out to the court. Before I do that, I'm getting a little bit ahead of myself. The standard that this court, panels of this court, has articulated time and again is that in assessing the persecution, the level of persecution posed by a threat, what matters is the will or ability of the persecutor to carry out the threat, not whether the threat, in fact, is carried out. And notice that it's in the disjunctive, will or ability, not will and ability. And that's been mentioned time and again. Here, neither the immigration judge nor the Board of Immigration Appeals referred to that standard, nor did they apply it. They did not assess the will or ability of MS-13 to carry out the threat.
Counsel, I don't think that states the standard correctly. The standard is whether the government is unable or unwilling to address the persecution. It's a focus as to the government's ability or inability to do so, not the willingness or ability of MS-13. There's certainly some overlap there, but I think you've misstated the standard.
I think, Your Honor, with all due respect, I think the unable or unwilling aspect of the claim is different than the standard that I just mentioned, because that is an element of the claim that petitioner would have to prove, or any applicant would have to prove. But that's different than assessing the risk, both for purposes of past persecution and for purposes of future persecution, posed by a gang or other private actors.
What is the threat we're talking about here? Is it the threat at the soccer field?
Correct.
Was there anything more than that?
There was no additional threat to Brenda because she immediately went into hiding. And by the way, the Board of Immigration Appeals did not actually adopt the immigration judge's opinion here. And there's language in a number of cases that unless the Board of Immigration Appeals expressly adopts the immigration judge's decision, then you look to the board's decision, the board's opinion. And the board did not mention the fact that she was in hiding, and nor did she have a cell phone when she was in Honduras. And it wasn't until she remained in hiding in the house 24/7 for 2 months because she was so afraid, because she had heard that MS-13 rapes, kills, and kidnaps. So she sequestered herself in the house, and it was only after she left that MS-13 contacted her mother to find out where she was. And that happened a year later, as we point out.
What is the relationship between what happened to your client and then the incident involving her brother on the motorcycle?
It was not clear what caused that incident. The immigration judge found that it was caused by the fact that her brother Arlington had rejected the advances of a woman who was affiliated with the gang. And one of our points is that that's significant because even though it may have been, quote, unrelated to the threat to Brenda, It shows what the group does to people who reject their advances. And the girlfriend had told the brother, I know some dangerous people, and if you don't get back together with me, you're going to be in trouble. And so the point that the significance of the attack, I think, is not that it was part of a retaliation for the threat to Brenda, but rather it shows that what happened, with the harm inflicted, and by the way, that left one person dead and her brother shot up in the hospital, and we submitted those photographs. It showed what the group does to people who reject their advances, and that's consistent with all the country conditions evidence. And what I wanted to hold up from the government's brief, and I'll just read a short excerpt if I may, it's at page 41, and the government says, given the voluminous country conditions evidence that indicated the harm and violence wrought by criminal groups like MS-13, including targeting, threatening, and abusing women in Honduras, and pursuing those who try to escape, see petitioner's brief at 3940, the gang was capable of immediate violent suppression, yet the record is clear that petitioner and her family remained unharmed, and petitioner, in fact, successfully left Honduras. So I think I would suggest that that's a concession that MS-13 had the ability to carry out the threat to Brenda, that she would be a gang member's girlfriend whether she wanted to or not. And even if it's not a concession by the government, it certainly shows the importance of the country conditions evidence. And in fact, what the government is saying here mirrors the mistake made by the agency, which was to focus not on the will or ability of MS-13 to carry out the threat, but rather whether the threat had been carried out. And also the another highlight on the country conditions evidence. At the very end of the individual calendar hearing, this is what the immigration judge said as he was beginning to announce what his decision would be. He said, he said, there are a lot of filings in this case.
Where are you in the record? Which AR?
This is at page 290.
Okay, thanks.
There are a lot of filings in this case, and you know there's a lot of testimony about the conditions in Honduras, and I understand why, because these are the things that need to be focused on, need to be focused on. But the judge didn't. He dismissed all of the country conditions evidence in a single sentence, and the board didn't even mention the country conditions evidence, nor did it mention the expert. I can see that I'm getting close to my time, and I haven't gotten to pattern and practice.
Well, why don't you go ahead and address that, and we'll make sure you have time for rebuttal.
Okay, thank you, Your Honor. So the issue on pattern and practice is whether women in Honduras is sufficiently particular to constitute a particular social group. And I would just respectfully remind the court that the basic purpose of particularity is to determine if you can tell who is in the group. And in fact, Judge, you yourself in the Andrade case said that's the ultimate question with respect to particularity.
That's one question. Here, I think we know who would be in the group. The question is the group too broad when it essentially includes half the population of a country?
I think I suggest, Your Honor, that we know that in Perdomo and in other cases, unpublished cases that we cited, this circuit time and again has remanded for consideration of whether women in a particular nationality could be a particular social group. And I'll just go back to what was said in Reyes versus Lynch, and that is that the particularity requirement does not impose limitations on size, breadth, or diversity. And also,
Counsel, the BIA did specifically address Perdomo. That's in footnote 5 on page,
Your Honor?
On page 4 of the BIA's decision in footnote 5. The BIA did specifically address Perdomo. It cites it and refers to its own decisions and decisions of this court that
Yes, Your
since
Honor.
Perdomo.
My point is that, and of course the government argues that Perdomo was decided before MEVG, which it was, but cases since, admittedly unpublished cases since MEVG, have remanded for consideration of women in a particular country. And I'll just make one last point. In KESG, the board said that you need to have age. You need to have one problem with women is that you need age. And it's women is a well-defined term. And Judge, you indicated that. The breadth, one last point on the breadth. I think that going back to what you said earlier, Judge Abibi, about unable, unwilling, in Lolong versus Gonzalez, you pointed out that an applicant, even in a pattern and practice claim, a situation, an applicant must prove that the persecutor, that the government was unable or unwilling to control the persecutor. And it might be, I'm not predicting or anything, but that's another element. So that even if the particular social group is recognized, any individual applicant is still going to have to show that the government was unable or unwilling to control the persecutor. And there may be situations in which that the government can meet that. The applicant won't be able to prove that. So I think that mitigates somewhat the concern about overbreadth.
Okay, thank you. We've given you some extra time, and I want to give you some further additional time, 2 minutes for rebuttal, so we'll look forward to hearing from you next.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay, let's hear from the government.
Good morning, and may it please the court. Mark A. Rook on behalf of the Attorney General. This petition for review should be denied. As the Supreme Court recently clarified in Urias Orellana v. Bondi, the persecution determination should be reviewed for substantial evidence. This includes the findings of fact and the application of the statute to the findings. In this case, the record does not compel reversal of the agency's findings. First, with respect to past persecution, all we have on the record is one threat by a stranger on a soccer field to the petitioner that was vague, not followed up on. There was no further action for the remaining 2 months that petitioner was in Honduras.
Although it seems that the petitioner took it pretty seriously by going into hiding for 2 months.
That's correct, Your Honor. Her testimony was initially that she had not gone into hiding, then subsequently in her testimony that she did go into hiding. It still remains that...
Are you disputing that piece of the record? You think it's not established one way or the other?
For the purposes of the decision in this case, the immigration judge assumed that she had gone into hiding. The fact remains that she was unharmed for the duration of the remainder of her time in Honduras.
Right, but she was in hiding, so she was unlikely to be harmed in hiding.
That's correct, Your Honor. This court has clarified in cases like Sharma v. Garland that the first thing that we look at is significant physical violence to the petitioner in a past persecution determination. This court has also clarified in Lim v. INS that unfulfilled threats are more relevant to future persecution than they are to past persecution because threats can be hollow and claims of threats are hard to disprove. Subsequently, we have only a secondhand communication from petitioner's mother that someone spoke in an ugly voice. It was unclear at the time if that person was in relation to the previous threat on the soccer field or not.
Was that MS-13, that phone call?
It's unclear from the record, Your Honor. According to petitioner's testimony, she stated that it was her opinion that it was MS-13. Her mother never said that it was the gangs. After that, we have an unfortunate and unrelated incident that happened to petitioner's brother, Arlington,
going to that incident, why isn't that part of the past persecution analysis? Because our case law says harm to the family can form the basis of past persecution. And the my concern is, and I'm giving you some time to address it, is the BIA didn't deal with that at all, even though it was raised in petitioner's appellate brief.
The fact of the matter remains, Your Honor, that this took place over 1 year after petitioner left for the United States.
No, I understand that, but I mean, my concern is the BIA didn't address it, and they said it took place. If they said what you said, it would be different. But they raised the issue of persecution to the family as part of their past persecution claim, and the BIA didn't address it at all. So we don't know what the BIA was thinking. Later on, of course, they dealt with it in terms of well-founded fear of future persecution. But that, when you have something that we've said is relevant that the BIA doesn't discuss, then that may be an issue.
It is a factor to be considered, Your Honor. But what is ultimately the inquiry is the harm that befell petitioner in this case. And the immigration judge explicitly found, based on the record, that the attack against Arlington was likely based on retribution by his ex-girlfriend in an unrelated incident, and that there was no animus or attempt to harm the petitioner in this case on that basis. Moving on to well-founded fear, having failed to establish past persecution, the petitioner does not benefit from a presumption of future persecution. And here, the record also does not compel reversal of the agency's findings. We have, aside from the incident to Arlington, we have no evidence that anyone specifically is still interested in petitioner. She's had no direct contact with anyone from MS-13 or the Los Colochos gang. And her own testimony is that after that phone call, her mother did not experience any future threats. We have the statement by petitioner's mother, which was given reduced weight as it was undated, unsigned, unnotarized, only written in English, and she was not available for cross-examination. Ultimately, what we have here are unconnected events. Her partner was not threatened or harmed, presumably by living there. Petitioner's parents would be at greater risk than she has, but it's noteworthy that neither of them have ever experienced any physical harm. Following the attack against Arlington, neither has he. And to go forward to the pattern or practice claim, the board in this case determined, based on its recent case precedent in matter of KESG, that the particular social group for women in Honduras is not cognizable. This was a question of law based on a recent decision by the board, establishing that this court's past precedent, as opposing counsel cited to in Perdomo, is distinguishable because the law on a particular social group has developed since the time that decision was issued. Now we have matter of MEVG, which establishes the requirements of immutability, particularity, and social distinction. And as cited in matter...
What do we do with that decision after Loper-Bright?
Which decision, Your Honor?
MEVG.
MEVG. Those decisions are still relevant for the court's consideration insofar as the principle of stare decisis. As long as that principle has been relied upon by this court, and as long as it's the best interpretation of the law, this court should still consider it moving forward. Now, we have subsequent cases to matter of MEVG, like Macedo Templos v. Wilkinson, where this court recognized that wealthy business owners lacks particularity, the particular social group of wealthy business owners, because it could include large swaths of the population and various cross-sections of a community. Similarly, in this court, in Mendoza-Alvarez v. Holder, the court has held that disabled persons constitute large numbers of people with different conditions and in different circumstances. Ultimately here, as the board stated in matter of KESG, we don't have the relevant narrowing features that make a particular social group. There's a reason that it is distinct from the other protected grounds and that it has these requirements of particularity, social distinction, and immutability. And that is because it cannot be amorphous, overbroad, diffuse, or subjective. Here we have no narrowing features such as age range, position in society, socioeconomic status, marital status, family background, or lifestyle. And if Congress had contemplated adding an entirely separate ground to an asylum inquiry, it would have done so. The other circuits have followed suit. Recently, the Sixth Circuit, the case from which a matter of KESG arose, Cristales de Linares v. Bondi, stated that a gender and nationality, particular social group in itself, is too far-reaching and diverse because it encompasses expansive demographic categories. Other courts have similarly held, such as the Second Circuit in Gomez v. INS, the Fifth Circuit in Jaco v. Garland, the 11th Circuit in Amezcua-Preciado v. Attorney General, the 10th Circuit in Matugi v. Holder, and the 8th Circuit in Safaya v. INS, that gender plus nationality, or gender alone, is insufficient to establish a particular social group. I'll briefly move on to the Convention Against Torture. In this case, petitioner is not arguing that she was subjected to past torture, and based on her inability to establish a well-founded fear of persecution, she has also failed to establish a likelihood of future torture. As this court specified in Park v. Garland, the likelihood of torture, it must be particularized to the petitioner, not just based on the country conditions evidence. And to the effect of acquiescence, which is a separate dispositive ground, petitioner has not established that the government would acquiesce to any future harm. As has shown, the government of Honduras has attempted to fight, albeit unsuccessfully, gangs, and that is insufficient to amount to acquiescence. Unless the court has any other questions for me, I'll conclude.
Okay. Thank you for your presentation. Okay.
Thank you, Your Honor.
I'd like to go through, I think, 6 points, but I can do it pretty quickly, I believe. First of all, it's not true that Brenda changed her testimony about being in hiding or not being in hiding. What happened was the judge said, "Did you ever leave your house?" And she said, "Yes." And then the judge came back and asked her about that, and she said, "Well, I left when I came to the United States." And then there was some dialogue about that, and she explained that and the judge pressed her on that point, and she explained that she was in hiding. She stayed in the house with her daughter, took her daughter out of school. That's all in the record. So this notion that she changed her testimony is wrong. The phone call, the circumstances clearly indicate that it was the phone calls to the mother were by MS-13. MS-13 doesn't announce itself with the formality of an Avon lady, and the circumstances show the timing, the language, the threats, and all of that are point to MS-13. The immigration judge did not find otherwise, nor did the board. No continuing interest in Brenda. Well, she left Honduras, so the gang was looking around, looking for her, but they didn't see her on the street, and she was gone. So this notion that they didn't have a continuing interest in her doesn't have any support in the record. By the way, the danger, the family continued to be targeted. The house was vandalized over a period of weeks and weeks. People were throwing rocks in the middle of the night. Again, the circumstances point to MS-13, and that's consistent with the expert's testimony, which is that one of the things the gangs will do is to surveil or watch a house for the purpose of telling people, "We know you're there, and we're keeping an eye on you, and we're watching you, so you need to do what we say." The mother's declaration was dated and signed. It was not notarized, but it was dated and signed under penalty of perjury under the laws of the United States, which is the appropriate form for that declaration. Pattern and practice, Macedos Templos, wealthy Mexican businessmen who have resisted extortion demands, is far different than gender plus nationality, especially given the country conditions evidence in Honduras that concerned the persecution and harm inflicted on women, as we cite in our brief. Descriptors from different observers, widespread, pervasive, normalized, alarming, and it goes on and on and on. So the women share a unifying characteristic. The Ninth Circuit doesn't require unifying characteristic, unlike the Sixth Circuit case that was cited by the government, but there is a unifying characteristic, and that's what marks the members of the group for harm. The cases from the other circuits that KESG cited, they don't apply. Two of them were pre, not only pre-MEVG, but pre-Perdomo, and they relied on Sanchez-Trujillo, which Perdomo essentially modified, and so the two of them are old and inapplicable. One of them dealt with social distinction, not particularity. I think that's the one from the Tenth Circuit. And so really, at bottom, those cases don't really provide the support for a KESG that the board attributed to them. In conclusion, I would say this petition is not about reweighing evidence. It's about insisting that immigration judges and the Board of Immigration Appeals apply the correct law, consider all relevant evidence, and do not cite the record selectively. All of those things happened in this case, and that's why remand is appropriate. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We thank both counsel for the briefing and argument, and this case is submitted.